It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Many people may have first become aware of Alzheimer's when legendary Hollywood actress Rita Hayworth, who passed away in 1987, was diagnosed with the disease. Since then, Alzheimer's has claimed the life of former President Ronald Reagan and countless others. October is National Alzheimer's Awareness Month, and joining me in studio to discuss the research being done to find medicines to stop the disease are Susan Catalano. She's Chief Science Officer of Cognition Therapeutics. Susan Catalano, welcome to the program.
Welcome. Thank you, Paul.
And Haley Jameson, Founder and President of the Clear Thoughts Foundation. Good to have you with us.
Thank you, Paul. It's great to be here.
Where are we, Susan, in terms of creating drugs to combat Alzheimer's?
Well, I think it's important to recognize that despite the clinical trial failures that people may have heard about in the news, we're actually experiencing an unprecedented era of innovation when it comes to new approaches that are being tried against the disease. I think the New York Times story that appeared today is an example of some of the very different approaches that are being taken. The researchers in that story were actually creating Alzheimer's in a dish. And of course, we've been doing something very similar to that for the past 7 years right here in our labs on the South Side in Pittsburgh.
Let's explain what is reported in that Times article. And when you say we've created Alzheimer's in a dish, you're talking about, in terms of doing research, you need to come up with a way to replicate the disease. So the researchers here have come up with something in a petri dish that is unlike anything that has been used for experiments in the past.
Well, yes and no. I think what they did was that was groundbreaking was grow the human neural stem cells in a three-dimensional matrix. And by doing so, they actually replicated a lot of the features of the disease. And there have been variations on that approach that have been tried in the past. And it's a very powerful way to screen an awful lot of candidates and find that needle in a haystack, that one-in-a-million drug that's actually going to stop the pathology that we see in the disease.
And what did researchers have to work with prior to this?
Well, prior to this, we all worked with transgenic mice. And these are mice that have been genetically engineered to have Alzheimer's disease. And they replicate some but not all of the features of the human disease. And so after you had discovered the drug, the next step was typically to test the drug in those mice to see if you could actually stop the progression of the disease.
And you mentioned it's like looking for a needle in a haystack when it comes to finding something that can slow the progression of this. That, more than anything else, probably speaks to how difficult it is finding a cure. This is something that is going to take a lot of searching and we may not be close to yet.
Well, I think there's actually reason to hope. As I said before, I think there's really an unprecedented degree of innovation in the approaches that are being tried now. And of course, one of the things we've all been struggling with is a dramatic lack of funding to support this innovative research. What we see is on the national level, for example, the National Cancer Institute's budget is $6 billion a year. But the earmark for Alzheimer's disease to the National Institute on Aging and other institutes is only $600 million. So it's different by a factor of 10.
And certainly, why is that?
I think there's a number of reasons for that. First of all, certainly I think there's a degree of lack of awareness. There was a recent Atlantic Monthly survey that suggested that 60% of the people they surveyed think that Alzheimer's is just a natural part of aging, rather than a disease that does not have to happen. And I think the other thing is the fact that the patients and their families, their caregivers, are very overwhelmed. It's a major cause of bankruptcy with families that have been affected by it. And I think for that reason, you haven't really seen a sort of a grassroots advocacy emerge from the patient population because they are disabled.
Has our thinking, has society's thinking about Alzheimer's in general evolved over the years? I mean, didn't it used to be that you'd hear the word senility and that was accepted as just a part of being old.
Certainly. And I think that's, as I was starting my scientific career, that was certainly the perception. But I think the more we've learned about this disease, the more we know it's a distinct pathology that does not have to happen. Age is the number one risk factor for it. But it's a disease process that begins with the buildup of a particular protein called amyloid beta in the brain. And this sets in motion a number of changes that result in the loss of the electrical points of communication in the brain called synapses. And when those are lost, you see memory failure, which is the earliest manifestation of the disease. And if you've ever spoken to a very sharp 96-year-old, you know that this is a disease that does not have to happen.
And what does it look like? You talked about these things that form inside the brain. What are they?
So the protein has a predisposition to assemble or self-assemble into a new structure that's not there normally in the brain. And when it assembles into this new structure, it actually does things that were never normally being done in the brain, and those things actually compromise the process of new memory formation in the brain. And so you have this disease state when this protein builds up and self-assembles into this toxic form.
And is it blocking signals? What exactly is happening?
Well, what it does is it binds to a receptor that's located on the surface of brain cells, and when it's there, it initiates very abnormal signaling that interferes with the delicate balance of electrical activity at that synapse. And the synapse can detect that something's wrong, and eventually it withdraws or regresses. And when it regresses, you get a failure of communication at the point where there used to be one. And if that gets widespread enough, then the neuron knows that something's very, very wrong, and it actually will initiate a process where it self-destructs. And when we lose neurons in the brain, when we lose a lot of them, we get this progressive dementia that initially starts with failed memory formation and then progresses to other realms of cognitive function, like verbal recall and things like that.
Are there things that we do that contribute to that in just the normal day-to-day living that we do?
Well, you know, Paul, the number one question that I get asked is, what are the risk factors? How do I know if I'm going to get this? And we know that about 10% of the total number of Alzheimer's cases are due to what we call autosomal dominant inherited mutations. These are mutations that are passed on from one generation to the next and result in a very aggressive early form of the disease, and these folks get it in their 40s and 50s. But 90% of the Alzheimer's cases are what we call sporadic late onset, and this is due to a complex interaction of genes in the environment that happen over many, many decades of life. And is a process that we still don't understand. But many of these risk factors, environmental or genetic, sort of neck down to this one critical node, this one point, which results in the buildup of this particular protein in the brain and its self-assembly into these toxic forms.
You can join the conversation with our guest, Susan Catalano, Chief Science Officer of Cognition Therapeutics, by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. With your comments and questions, email is esspgh@wesa.fm. On Twitter at esspgh, hashtag EPLive. Do you have a loved one or someone in your family with Alzheimer's or dementia? Again, our number, 412-246-2002. Haley Jamison is here. She's founder and CEO of the Clear Thoughts Foundation. Haley, what is the biggest challenge you face in raising funds for Alzheimer's dementia drug research?
Well, Paul, as Susan mentioned, I think really one of the misconceptions that go along with dementia is that it is a natural process of aging. So as a foundation, we are extremely passionate about educating people that it is not a natural process of aging, and they need to treat it and look at it and view it as a disease, no different than cancer. You know, Susan mentioned some of the statistics, and it's astonishing the amount of money that's raised, certainly all for noble causes, but certainly in our opinion, dementia is one of those causes as well that deserves the more recognition than, unfortunately, it has received to date. So from a fundraising standpoint, we need to educate people that it is not a natural process of aging and that it is actually a disease that can be stopped. And that is clearly, you know, as our name says, Clear Thoughts, our clear mission is to end dementia. We want to fund the research that will find a cure for dementia, not modify the symptoms of the disease, but to actually end the disease.
Are statistics or is the research showing that we're seeing more people diagnosed with early onset Alzheimer's? Certainly the case of Pat Summitt, the women's basketball coach at Tennessee, is something that maybe has shed some light on that.
Well, I think in terms of the inherited form of the disease, usually those families are aware because of this aggressive and young age. And usually those folks are identified by their doctors and by healthcare professionals and have been actually wonderful participants in the research. We've learned an awful lot about by the absolutely selfless dedication of these folks to the research. And so that's wonderful. I think the prevalence really has to do with the demographics of the population at large. And as we age as a country, we're seeing more and more growth in the number of patients that actually have the disease. Right now, the statistics are dramatic. Last year, we spent $214 billion with a B to care for these patients, and it's going to go over $1 trillion and is anticipated to bankrupt Medicare.
And wow, that's a sobering thought in and of itself. But we are seeing younger people. And so that, I would think, hopefully, as people learn more about this, would Haley, for you, make it easier to educate people and to say, we need help and support because this is not just something that affects older people. It is striking. The early onset is hitting more and more younger Americans and people throughout the world.
Absolutely, Paul. Just within the last year or so, we lost a member of the Clear Thoughts community, so to speak, who was in his early 40s, a father of two. And certainly one would not look at him and say, oh, I imagine he's suffering from dementia. But since he was, and my personal cause for starting Clear Thoughts was, again, very personal to me in that I lost my father this past Christmas Day to dementia. And he started to show signs in his 60s. No, certainly there
and
are.
And what are the signs? What happens?
Well, in our particular situation, he did not have Alzheimer's. He had a form by the name of frontal temporal dementia, a form of dementia referred to as FTD. So he was always a very outgoing, personable gentleman. And unfortunately, you know, looking back, we wish we would have known then what we know now, because we didn't assume it was dementia. We thought that perhaps he was just going through perhaps some type of depression. He just became very withdrawn and not engaging and not the person he had been his whole life. So it took, which often is the case with dementia, it takes a long time to diagnose. I mean, he went through meetings with doctors and psychiatrists and psychologists, and it was probably a year and a half process until he was diagnosed with, again, the form of dementia known as FTD.
What are the things that the early onset can be mistaken for?
Well, you know, as I mentioned, we actually worried about depression, which, you know, for anybody that knew my father, was something that one would never, ever have thought. And I personally, I was like, he's not depressed. I just had a hard time getting my arms around that. But that's a great question, Paul. It can be very difficult to look at the signs and say, oh, you know, I think it must be dementia. Particularly in my family, we had no family history of it. So I wasn't familiar with dementia at all. And it was something that we never even thought of as a possibility. And, you know, again, that's part of our mission with Clear Thoughts, is to have people, to educate them, to have them be able to look for the early signs. And certainly, again, in my own personal family and the tragedy we went through, he was sick for 7 years and, again, passed away on Christmas Day. But one of the items that I also am passionate about from a foundation standpoint is letting people know that I think there's a lot of negative stigma around dementia and, oh, well, he must not have been educated or active. I mean, my father was an executive here locally with U.S. Steel. He ran marathons. He was an artist. I mean, you know, obviously as his daughter, I'm biased, but I can truly say he was a brilliant man and active physically and mentally. So I think we need to erase that belief, that myth that, well, you know, just keep yourself active and you won't get dementia. That is not the case. So I'm very passionate about educating people about that, educating people that it can happen at all ages. It's not a natural process of aging. And in fact, it's not a process of aging at all. It is a disease.
And at Pat Summitt, I think, probably opened a lot of eyes when, I mean, and again, she was a very accomplished, record-setting basketball coach at the University of Tennessee, a pioneer in women's athletics. And when she stepped down, she said, I know that this is – that I'm not going to be able to continue to do this. She knew what was coming. So that leads to the question of how do doctors test someone for dementia or Alzheimer's?
Well, the first thing a clinician is going to do is certainly rule out a number of other disorders, such as normal pressure hydrocephalus or vitamin deficiency, certainly any pre-existing psychiatric symptoms. So it's very important that folks actually go to their doctor and get some of these other causes ruled out. But one thing that was pioneered here in Pittsburgh is something called a PET tracer that actually can detect the presence of this protein and its buildup in the brain. And it's something that Pittsburgh should be very proud of. It was very groundbreaking research and is now used to definitively rule out or in Alzheimer's disease in particular. We're a little bit further behind for some of the other dementias. We don't have as similar PET imaging agents for those diseases that can help with the diagnosis in a living patient, but researchers are hard at work on that. And some of the first tracers to identify the buildup of the tau protein that we see in frontotemporal dementia actually were reported within this past year. So it's very exciting times. It's an example of the innovation that I talked about earlier.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and we are talking about Alzheimer's and dementia here on today's program, taking your calls at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002 with our guest, Susan Catalano, Chief Science Officer of Cognition Therapeutics, and also Haley Jameson, who is founder and president of the Clear Thoughts Foundation. And Haley, as the population ages, is it becoming easier to raise funds?
Well, Paul, that's a great question. The answer that I would give is I hope so. Certainly time will tell. I think as dementia in general gets more and more publicity, literally this week alone, I saw a segment on the Today Show with Seth Rogen, who is also bringing awareness to dementia, and then also the Glenn Campbell story, which he has created an unbelievable documentary about his own life with dementia. So as it becomes, you know, more and more of a common topic, and again, as it continues to become more common and hopefully lose the negative stigma associated with it, I can only hope that due to the increased awareness and coverage and media exposure and government funding, hopefully, that it will trickle down to individual funding and, of course, increased government funding as well.
Is there any research you're encouraged by that would make raising funds easier? Maybe what we just heard about this weekend in the New York Times?
Sure. I certainly will have Susan take a stab at that one. But from my standpoint, I wanted to add, too, you know, again, as a family member who watched a loved one struggle, it was so frustrating to know that there was perhaps drugs out there that would halt or even stop the disease, but that they weren't brought to market yet because of lack of funding, hence the creation of Clear Thoughts. I mean, it was a horrific experience for myself and other family members to watch our father struggle and to know that there was nothing on the market that could help, but that there were possibilities out there that could come to the market if we had the funding to bring them to market. So we decided to take action and start Clear Thoughts. But certainly,
right. So I guess what I'm asking is this research, is the fact that when signs of progress are coming out, does that make it easier to reach out to people? Are you hearing more from people who are willing to?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, certainly the families that are again watching a loved one struggle, they want the answer's now, not next year, not 10 years. It's obviously that the pain associated with dementia, as I tell everybody, you know, my father passed away less than a year ago, but in essence, we lost him 6-7 years ago. So you lose your loved ones long before you actually bury them because you have to physically take care of them. But so as these new possibilities are brought to market, I think that, you know, there's increased hope out there, and that certainly, again, hopefully will therefore result in increased funding.
Let's go to the phones. 412-246-2002, the number to call. We have Pat in Squirrel Hill. Pat, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hi. My question is, if my mother had Alzheimer's in her 60s and two of my siblings have now developed symptoms in their 60s, does that increase the likelihood that my three other siblings and myself will develop it?
Susan Catalano?
So that's a very good question, and it's a little bit tough to say. I think the important thing would be to go to a geriatrician or a physician who actually specializes in treating dementia. What they'll do is they'll give you and your siblings a variety of tests, and it's even possible to have genetic tests to look to see if you carry any of the risk factors for it. And that physician can really help put the total health picture of you and your siblings in context, in an appropriate context, and let you know exactly what the probabilities are.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Pat. We appreciate your call. Let's go to Susan in Shadyside. Susan, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Yes, hello?
Hi. You're on the air.
Yes, hi. My mother was always in good health. She had no cancer, no major illness, no heart disease, nothing. At 88, she had started having paranoid delusions. So she ended up at a short stay at a dementia unit, and she ended up being on Seroquel, and that reversed the situation. But when I was at the unit, I had a full workup by a geriatric physician. And what he said to me, no one else, she had been in the hospital first for a day and then in the unit, et cetera, no one took any B12 levels. He took a B12 level and said it was in the toilet. That was his exact word. And he took me out in the hallway of her room and said, most or all of her symptoms could be caused by this low B12 level. Now, I took her home and she was okay. I took her for a couple years, she was okay. Took her to her physician, who is at Senior Care Shadyside. So this is not; these are people who should know what they're doing. And I said, "Look at this B12 level." She looked back on her record; she had never taken a B12 level on my mother ever.
Hmm. This sounds like maybe it's the opposite of what we were talking about earlier, where the symptoms of Alzheimer's or dementia are confused for something else.
That's true, and that's sort of what I said in response to the first caller. It's very important that the total clinical picture, including vitamin deficiencies, be taken into account.
Well, sorry that happened to you, Susan. Thank you for the phone call and for sharing your story. And Susan Catalano, you relocated your company, Cognition Therapeutics Incorporated, from California to Pittsburgh. Explain what was your motive there.
Absolutely. So when I started this company, it was very apparent to me that Pittsburgh was a wonderful place to situate it. There's a very low cost of doing business here in Pittsburgh, and we have one of the world's greatest concentrations of really cutting-edge neurobiology. And I knew as a result of that that it's actually possible to build a neurobiology company here in Pittsburgh. So that combined with the real welcome that we got from the economic development agencies locally made it a no-brainer. And we've never looked back. I absolutely adore Pittsburgh. I think it's absolutely perfect in every way. And Haley is a big part of the reason why. I think it's just a perfect place for it. The local institutions have been very successful getting funding from the federal government and other sources. There's a lot of cutting-edge research that's done here, including that which is done in our labs right a couple blocks from here.
412-246-2002, if you have a comment or a question or a story relating to Alzheimer's. For our guest, Susan Catalano, who is Chief Science Officer of Cognition Therapeutics, and also Haley Jamison, founder and president of the Clear Thoughts Foundation. Elizabeth in Forest Hills has been waiting to join us. Elizabeth, welcome to the program. How are you?
I'm fine. Thanks for taking the call. And I do have a question.
What about the research connection being made, or the research being done and the connection being made recently between these illnesses and the increasing use of anti-anxiety drugs or other perfectly legal pharmaceutical drugs that many Americans are using to cope with life in this culture?
Sure, that's a very good question, Elizabeth. Where we've studied the drugs that actually enable folks to cope with a variety of mood disorders, and we've studied them in Alzheimer's patients, the data seem to indicate that it's really not a great idea for those patients, that it really just sort of adds to their burden and doesn't provide much in the way of relief. Now, that's something that really has to be considered on a case-by-case basis. Certainly, where we've looked epidemiologically, and epidemiology is the study of diseases and how they radiate in populations, and it's a very precise science. The number one risk factor really is age. There aren't any other environmental risk factors that we really see being robust for the majority of folks who come down with the late onset sporadic form of Alzheimer's.
But they're talking about the predisposing one to the illnesses by the taking of these anti-anxiety drugs and other pharmaceuticals, that being one of the things that can throw you into it ultimately down the road. That was actually where I was going, not for the treatment of those who have already been diagnosed. So, sorry.
Sure. So we know that conditions like depression and anxiety are one of the risk factors that contribute to the likelihood of coming down with the disease. Certainly patients who are depressed are at a greater risk than patients who are not depressed of actually coming down with Alzheimer's disease.
But and Elizabeth, if you're still there, your main concern here seems to be, if I'm interpreting you correctly, is that you're concerned about a connection of anti-anxiety drugs prescribed to people that may contribute to dementia illnesses later in life?
Exactly. So there just seems to be – and so we're seeing a lot of people, more people taking anti-anxiety drugs.
Right.
Life is becoming increasingly anxiety-producing.
Sure. So, Susan,
and so are these two things correlated? I mean, are these two things related to one another?
Are they?
Sure. As far as we know, it's really going to be challenging to disentangle them. We don't really see the drugs contributing to higher incidence. We do see this correlation between pre-existing psychiatric symptoms and risk of coming down with dementia in later in life.
So the things that you may be taking the drugs for might be a contributing factor, but not the drugs themselves.
Exactly.
All right. So I think we've cleared that up, Elizabeth. Good question, though. Thank you for raising that. So what we're talking about is something that is strictly brought on by the neurological aspects of one's brain, and there may be symptoms that occur during the course of one's lifetime that may be a tip-off.
Exactly. So the ultimate root causes of conditions like depression and anxiety are complicated, and they may differ in different people, but they may be related to the processes inside the brain that ultimately result in the buildup of this protein and actually coming down with forms of dementia.
And let's go to Ted in the West End, we'll go first to Karen on the North Side. Karen, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh. Go ahead with your comment or question. Hi, is this Karen?
Yes, it is.
Hi, Karen. Go ahead with your comment or question.
Okay. I've done graduate work at Pitt in dementia, and I've also had family members and friends who have had those Alzheimer's and primary brain tumors, cared for them. And the radiation dementia that people get from being treated for a primary brain tumor, is there any overlap? Because the comment about losing the person long before they die, it made me think of how my sister was when she was still living after her treatment with a primary brain tumor and the dementia that she experienced and the symptoms that she had.
Sure. So that's a very good question. I think there are a number of forms of brain damage. Certainly, radiation treatment would be one of them that can contribute to coming down with a form of dementia. Another would be stroke or other kinds of direct injury to the brain. So there's no question that there's a range of risk factors that add up in a very complicated way and contribute to the risk of coming down with dementia.
Yeah, they said that the tissue, you know, that were radiated, that were floating around in the brain, that contributed to the dementia. Are they in any way similar to the plaques caused that occur in dementia?
So brain damage leads to a variety, depending on the form of the damage, it leads to a variety of debris, as you point out, from the cells that can actually yield a temporarily high protein load in the brain. And as the brain struggles to clear that, you have activation of a population of brain cells called glia. And they chew up this debris and try to digest it and actually ship it outside of the brain. So it places enormous stress on them. The material, that cellular debris, is a little bit different from the plaques, which are primarily composed of this amyloid beta protein.
Karen, thank you for that phone call. Let's go to Ted now in the West End. Ted, thank you for waiting. Go ahead with your comment or question.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm single in my early 80s, 82 as an example, and about 5 years ago, whenever I had told my PCP that I was having difficulty with my short-term memory, he suggested I have a test by a clinical psychologist, and apparently I failed the numbers part of that extensive testament was that his early age-related dementia, and is there anything that is felt that could be done? I'm still performing at a very high level in my full-time job, but my short-term memory is not very good. Is there anything that you might suggest, either testing or as far as diet or anything else that may improve my situation?
Well, and Ted, thank you for calling and sharing your situation with us. And Susan Catalano, I'll let you take Ted's question.
Well, Ted, you certainly sound fantastic. At your age is just fantastic. We do know that there is an age-related memory decline, and this is something that's the exact parameters of this are very well established. And so when a physician gives you a memory test like this, they can tell you whether it's something that's really profoundly abnormal, which would indicate dementia. If it's just part of this normal age-related decline in memory function, it's important, no matter what, to stay under the care of a qualified physician that can help, or certainly having a well-balanced diet, staying active physically. The physically active you are, the more blood supply you get to the brain, and that's a very good idea. And also to just remain socially engaged. This seems to be a very critical part of keeping your mood elevated and actually staving off a lot of the negative effects of the both age-related decline and dementia, if that's what you're ultimately diagnosed with. But it sounds like you sound fantastic to everybody here in the studio, Ted.
So in some cases, the natural short-term memory loss might be a cause for alarm for people that they may not need to be as concerned about.
Exactly.
It may not be dementia. It may not be something like Alzheimer's.
Exactly. And I think it's important to stay under the care of a physician who specializes in this. As I said, a geriatrician or a neurologist can help out and can actually let you know what's going on with you in your particular case.
Do out you, Susan, to find out how their loved ones were in part in drug trials in hopes of finding a cure, and especially since the person taking part may not be able to make that decision on their own?
You know, that's a very good question. Certainly, one of the most heartbreaking parts of my job is getting the calls from folks who have a loved one, and people are absolutely desperate for something that can help their loved one. And of course, you know, the process associated with clinical trials for new medicines for the disease is a very highly regulated one. And one of the things that you can do is you can go to clinicaltrials.gov, and there you can see the full list of clinical trials that the FDA has permitted to be conducted. What you'll see for each of the trials, if you do a word search on Alzheimer's, for example, or dementia, for each of the trials, you'll see inclusion criteria and exclusion criteria. That'll let you know what kinds of patients are specifically going to be able to be included in the trial and what other kinds of medical conditions would result in them being excluded from the trial. And almost always, you'll see that a caretaker is required. So this is someone who is going to be with the person and usually bringing the person to the clinical trial study site throughout the duration of the trial. I think companies and academic groups that are have these drugs that are candidates for actually stopping dementias are very, very aware of the ethical considerations around patient enrollment, and usually the patients are in the earlier phases of their disease for these trials. But it certainly is something that ethicists are very concerned with, and that companies and academic centers continue to monitor very closely.
And quickly, Haley, you say it's harder to get older people involved in clinical trials.
Right. I had wanted to mention, Paul, you know, certainly again from my own personal experience, my father was not eligible for any of the trials due to arrhythm heart eliminate from entering any of these trials. So again, I think in a nutshell, that needs to be raised to find a cure, because unfortunately only help a very limited number of people in the population.
Haley Jameson is founder and president of the Clear Thought Foundation, and also Susan Catalano is chief science officer of Cognition Therapeutics. Thanks to both of you for being here. It's been an enlightening conversation.
Thanks so much, Paul.
Thank you so much, Paul, for having us. And certainly just a quick note about Clear Thoughts. We have our annual fundraiser coming up this Friday evening. So if you'd like more information, feel free to go to our website, clearthoughtsfoundation.org.
And we'll have a link to that on our website.
Wonderful.
We'll put that there on WESA.com. Coming up, we'll look at the resources available to families affected by Alzheimer's and other forms of dementia. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.